Hashtag murder may contain explicit and disturbing material and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to
Hashtag murder.
Woo! I'm Scar.
And I'm Alex.
And we're millennials who love murder.
And, oh, I don't have an and. I didn't have one ready. Do you like Mario Kart?
Well, here's the thing. So, oh boy. I had an N64 growing mm-hmm. up, which I still own.
Yes. That's right. You got one of those little cords to put in your TV.
I did. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that my father did not sell in the several yard sales that we had and Goodwill runs. So, I still have it. Never had Mario. Any faction of Mario,
Nothing?
Nope. We played 007 and Diddy Kong Racing and Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong is Mario affiliated.
It is.
Not the same, though.
No. And Yoshi, of course.
And Yoshi, yeah.
I don't know why we never had Mario. I don't know if that Strange. Was like a weird religious choice. Is Mario...
It's not me, I'm Mario.
Is Mario an atheist and we didn't know it as children? I don't know. But no, never had it.
Well, that's what we
did. I've played it.
You played it, but you've never owned it? Okay. Yeah. Well, that's what we did during the storm yesterday, because Kayla has a Switch. And she's like, do you want to play Mario? Because we also don't have any internet right now. So I was like, sure.
Oh, at her new place?
Apartment. Yeah. WoW is just, they suck. They are not WoW.
Fucking WoW.
They are not WoW.
Remember doing that? Yes. I'm holding up two W's and opening your mouth. That's stupid. Okay, sorry. Continue.
But yeah, they suck. The internet's just not working. So we played Mario Kart, and she is a fiend. We probably played like 30, 35 rounds. I came in first place once.
Wow.
She beat me.
She has that shit memorized.
She does.
She knows all the songs. She's making up words to the songs.
She probably fucking does.
Oh, well, that's fun. Yep. That's a good thing to do in a storm.
Yep. And then, so she always plays as Shy Guy. Wow.
That was a good.
Thank you.
That was really good.
I've heard her child do it like 25 times, so I know it now. And then I always play as Toad.
Oh, yeah.
He's cute.
He is very cute. He's very small.
He's very squishy.
Which I appreciate. Well, that's fun. Anytime there's an impending storm, Dustin panics.
Dustin would never panic. How dare you accuse any of the Brantons of panicking? None of them would ever.
Any panic shops. And we have... What game was it? I can't remember. But there's a game in the closet. And I was like, honey, why do we own this? And he was like, oh, I panic bought that because the hurricane was coming and I thought we wouldn't have any games to play or anything to do.
So we bought a new game.
So we panic bought a shitty board game. I don't know which one it is. I'll have to ask it whenever we go back downstairs. But yeah, the hurricane preparedness, although this was not a hurricane.
No, it was just a storm.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first hurricane year?
Yes.
I remember you texted me and you're like, what do I need to buy for a hurricane?
Oh, and you said alcohol.
And bottled water.
Uh-huh. Those are the only two things you need.
And snacks.
And snacks. Maybe some candles, but Lord knows I already owned candles.
Yeah, I was like, get some of those candles. And you're like, that's easy. Yeah. Nope, got it.
Check. Oh my God. Well, Alex.
I got another.
You've got a classic serial killer for me.
I do. I haven't done one in a while.
I know.
And I had this one typed up like months ago because I was watching SVU and it was the episode with Gregory Yates.
Yeah.
And the crossover with Chicago PD and all, and that good one.
Yes.
So I was like, damn, like I wonder if he's related to this guy who's Robert Lee Yates. They normally don't use the same like last names or first names or anything, but they did this time, I guess, because I think he's loosely based on him. So we're going to talk about Robert Lee Yates.
Yes.
The Spokane serial killer.
Oh my.
Also known as the grocery bag killer, but I only saw that in like one article, so I don't know how frequent that was used.
There were several.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did my own little... You told me about this one, and I was like, I must know more before we do it.
Yeah, you have to prepare yourself for this one.
I know, but there were several where he...
Was called the grocery bag killer.
We'll get to it.
Yep.
Okay.
So, He has the same kind of vibe as one of our earlier cases that I did, the butcher baker, Robert Hansen.
Was he the Alaska?
Alaska one. Yeah, the Alaska.
The Bush plane.
The Bush company.
And the Bush company. Yep. Okay, go listen to that
one. Same kind of vibe. So he's just a human piece of shit.
Yep, they are wont to be.
Robert Lee Yates was born May 27th, 1952 in Oak Harbor, Washington.
Is that a Taurus or is that an Aries?
That is a Gemini.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, duh.
Yeah, Aries is before my sign. So, yes.
I got you.
Because Kayla's an Aries. I'm a Taurus.
Oh, no wonder I like her so much.
Yep.
Quick side note. I know you are four words in. Mm-hmm. I do apologize. Alex got me the best birthday present.
Oh, I did.
Ever.
Did you speak to dead people yet?
Not yet. I gotta find the right table space. I gotta get a tablecloth.
Gotta get the vibe.
I gotta get all my crystals in line. But she got me a handmade Ouija board.
Yep.
With the planchette, also handmade.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got like a felt bottom to it. Oh my god, it's heavenly. I love it.
It was so fucking cool when I was like scrolling through Etsy trying to find you something creepy. Because at first I was going to get you something taxidermied. I thought you would like it.
I would love it.
I know. But I was like, I couldn't find anything taxidermied that would look cool in your aesthetic.
Yeah.
But then I found the Ouija board and I was like, oh, this thing looks fucking cool.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it was from Wisconsin. And the lady that messaged me asked like what color tone I wanted and like gave me options. It was real cool.
Oh my God.
Etsy's the bomb.
It really is.
I think I've gotten like most of your birthday and Christmas presents from Etsy.
I think I've gotten most of them. They're all like baseball themed. And
like my Mookie Jesus candle.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. Sorry to derail like 4 seconds in.
Anyway, Robert Lee Yates was born May 27th, 1952 in Oak Harbor, Washington. Yes, it's a Gemini.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He was in an average middle-class family, besides the fact that his grandma was an axe murderer.
Okay. I did not know this.
It's so fucking wild.
Oh, my.
So 7 years before Robert was born, so he's not even like a twinkle in his parents' eye yet, Grandma Yates murdered Grandpa Yates on October 12th, 1945.
With an axe.
With an axe.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So Robert's father, Robert Lee Yates Sr., was one of, I know, there's too many fucking similar names in here, but basically Daddy Yates was one of 11 children to a family living in Van Buren, Tennessee.
Okay.
So Grandpa Yates worked as a farmer and he wasn't home, you know, much, mm-hmm. which led to a lot of tension in the house because he was leaving his wife to tend to all of their children, short of a fucking dozen, and the home by herself all the fucking time. And then she found out good old Grandpa Yates was going to the brothels, and sometimes he would even take the kids with him to, like, hang out while he was, you know, doing the deed in the brothel.
No, sir. No Daddy Yates. No.
No Grandpa Yates.
No Grandpa Yates.
Grandpa Yates is a shit stain himself. So one night, Daddy Yates heard a loud noise, and it woke him up. So he went and ventured downstairs to the living room to investigate, which is when he found his father lying on the floor in a pool of his own blood. Grandpa Yates had 4 wounds all on his face. He was not dead yet, though. He ended up dying 4 days later at the hospital after succumbing to his injuries.
Oh, he probably had some brain injuries.
Oh, he definitely did.
Four days.
I was more surprised that she didn't, like, chop him in the dick.
Yeah.
She did not do that.
Yeah.
So, Grandma Yates ended up being sentenced to time in a psychiatric facility for, quote, felonious assault.
Oh, felonious assault. Felonious. That sounds kind of fun.
They're like,
I bet she killed a guy.
Yeah, they're like, oh, she's not, you know, angry and aggressive. She's just psychotic. Felonious. She's felonious and psychotic. Lock her up.
Oh my God. Okay.
So Daddy Yates ended up marrying a lady named Anna May.
Sweet.
And then Robert Jr., so our new Robert, was born 7 years later, and he was their second child.
All right.
The Yates were very active members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Are they the ones where only a specific number of people are going to make it to heaven?
I think so.
Lutheran? Or is that Mormon?
Mormon is Seventh-day.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right. So
well, they don't like being called the Mormons, I guess, anymore. They like being called Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Oh, so this is like a rebirth of...
The name, yeah.
Oh. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, because I just listened to a Time Suck episode.
You and Dustin.
I fucking love them. who's and fucking Dan Cummins is from the same area as the Spokane serial killer, Robert Lee Yates. But he was talking about the fucking Duggars.
Oh, God.
And then something, another family as well in one of his episodes, and it was about the Mormon Church.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, if I am wrong on that information...
Just let us know.
Just let us know.
We're not going to look it up.
Or just yell at Dan Cummins. It's not my fault.
Yeah.
But Robert Jr. Was a well-behaved, mild-mannered child who never got on his parents or anything like that. Never gave him any issues. Very similar to Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Daddy Robert and Jr. were very close when he was growing up, and Daddy Robert coached Jr.'s Little League baseball teams, sang in the church choir with him. They did everything together. Very, very, very close.
Yeah.
Outside looking in, the Yates were like the perfect family with the perfect son.
Okay.
All was happy-go-lucky until Robert turned 6 when he was sexually assaulted by his 11-year-old neighbor. Obviously, this affected him very deeply, but he didn't let it show. He kind of, internalized that.
Yeah.
By the time he was 11, he was abusing and killing animals in the neighborhood and was even suspected of committing arson.
Wow.
Yeah. He's doing the whole triad thing. He was probably wet in his bed, too.
Yeah.
Because bedwetting, arson, and cruelty to animals or other people.
Yeah. What is that called?
Homicidal triad?
No, it's like somebody's name. I think it's McDonald's. McDonald's triad?
Google.
I could have totally just made Google. That up. I might have made that up. I don't know.
I'm Googling. Hold on.
Okay. McDonald's, maybe?
I think you're just hungry. It's the McDonald.
The McDonald's triad.
Mac Daddy triad.
Okay.
You were right.
You know, it's rare.
It's rare, but it does happen.
It does happen every once in a while. Okay.
So, in high school, baby Robert was very committed to baseball and was a starting pitcher for his school's varsity team.
Good for him.
Do you know what a pitcher is?
He's the one who throws the ball to the guy who hits it.
Yep.
Or to his catcher.
Yep.
He's trying to throw it to the catcher.
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha.
She's referencing the baseball episode we did. when he wasn't practicing sports ball, he spent time working odd jobs like mowing lawns, washing cars, and harvesting vegetables.
Classic teen
making
boy, money.
Making stuff, money stuff, yeah. He was well known around the neighborhood for being hardworking and willing to put the extra time into his work, which is a good thing to be known for.
Yeah.
Some of his former classmates and teachers remember him being very quiet and keeping to himself most of the time, kind of like a loner, but he was always polite and never really had issues with turning in his schoolwork or like interacting with his peers. He just kind of kept to himself. He was quiet.
Yeah. So far,
normal.
Well, except for the killing animals and setting things on fire.
And probably wetting his bed.
Yeah. But other than that,
totally normal.
Totally normal.
So, along with being a talented baseball pitcher, Robert was also in the school choir, and he had a girlfriend for most of his time in high school.
All right.
So, absolutely normal. During his senior year in high school, Robert's friend, Al Gotti, said that the two of them had aspirations to either become doctors or park rangers, which are very different.
Two different things.
Yeah. I was like, okay, so you either want to go to medical school for 8 years or be a park ranger.
Yeah.
Both are great careers, but very different.
Oh, yeah. I always wanted to be a park ranger. I thought that would be a lot of fun. Also, okay, his last name is Gotti.
Yeah.
I say Gaddy. Have you ever heard of Mr. Gaddy's?
No.
It's like a Chuck E. Cheese.
What?
Yeah.
Is this in the Tuck?
It is.
Oh, of course it is.
There were seven. That's where every soccer, like end of the year soccer
party was at. Yeah.
Was Mr. Gaddy's. And it was so fucking fun. I just had to throw that in there.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
anyway, they spent a lot of time outdoors, fishing, hunting, hiking, doing dude shit. And they wanted to make a career out of their love for biology and science.
Cool. Both good professions to go into.
Yep. Neither of the two boys drank or partied, and instead they spent time going on long hikes with one another, which gives me Brokeback Mountain vibes.
I was gonna say, are they more than just friends? Or are they just...
I don't think so. I think that Gotti, based on like all the like videos and stuff that I watched, he maybe had a little boy crush. On Robert, but I don't get the vibe from Robert.
Oh, all right.
So both Al and Robert graduated high school, ended up attending the local community college. It was here that Robert met his future wife, Shirley Nylander, and after graduating with his associate's degree in general studies, the two lovebirds got married on August 27th, 1972. 2772.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a hard time remembering dates, just do the palindrome.
Yep.
Dustin always, because him and Clint's birthday is 2882.
Mm-hmm.
And every time, and now I say it every time, which I don't know why people are asking me Dustin's birthday, but if they do, I say it's 2882, it's a palindrome, mm-hmm. because Dustin says 2882, it's a palindrome. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but say it now.
It's the tism.
It is.
After getting married, the couple settled down in College Place, Washington, to attend Walla Walla College.
God damn it.
I think that's a fun name. I feel like I keep
interrupting, but Kylie is obsessed with Walla Walla, Washington.
Walla Walla.
And there's a specific wine from there that she, like, just can't get over. She's obsessed with it. She okay, talks Kylie. About it constantly. Yeah. Hi, Kylie. Anyway.
But this college was run by the Seventh-day Adventists, and that's why Robert chose that college.
Oh, okay.
Robert studied pre-med here at the Walla Walla, and things were, you know, golden, happy-go-lucky, the end. Love you, bye.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Well, we all know
that. That's not, yeah. So Robert and Shirley got divorced after a quick 2-year marriage.
2 years?
Yeah. Mine lasted 4, so I doubled that.
Good on you.
Yeah. So Shirley filed paperwork, Robert signed the papers, didn't put up a fight, and the two went on to their separate ways. There's not any information on why they separated or why Shirley filed divorce, but it didn't appear super messy or long and drawn out.
I'm sure there were some things happening behind closed doors.
I think she saw some red flags and she got out before it got bad.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened.
But also, why don't you date somebody for like a few years?
And then get married. And then
get married.
Yeah.
Like,
you don't gotta rush it.
Yeah, because then you gotta pay to get out of it and it's this whole thing.
Yeah, and then you get divorced after 4 years.
Stop it. Oh, I love you.
Okay. So Robert didn't seem too deeply affected by this breakup. Shortly after, he started dating a classmate named Linda Brewer. And she, dun dun dun, fell pregnant.
As they always do.
Just a few months after they started their little romance.
Oh, Linda.
So naturally, Linda and Robert got married in a small ceremony after finding out about Linda becoming pregnant.
Well, they had to.
Yeah.
They had to get married.
But they had a little problem here. Robert's divorce wasn't official yet, so the marriage was null and void.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can't get married if you're already married.
No. Linda didn't really seem to care, though, and she was in love with Robert, and she was willing to stay with him. Hmm. About a month after the pseudo-wedding ceremony, Linda started to notice some of her new husband's odd habits, like that he had drilled a hole into their bathroom ceiling, and it looked right over into their neighbor's bedroom.
The ceiling or the wall?
It said ceiling. So I think it, like, he would, like, look through.
So what, he'd, like, stand on the toilet?
Yeah, and look through. And you could see everything that's going on.
That's...
Because you're not very likely to notice a hole in your floor, but you're probably going to notice one in your ceiling, I think was what he was going for. Well, like, they were the downstairs neighbors, and he was looking through.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I guess so. Yeah.
Strange. I mean, you could put one in the floor or the wall, too, I guess.
I guess. I don't know.
He's a weird fucking dude.
Strange way to go about being a peeping Tom.
Yeah, Robert told Linda he drilled the hole so he could watch that couple have sex. And Linda was like, what the fuck? So she left Robert, but she ended up going back to him pretty soon after.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The breakup did not last long.
No, I think she wanted to make it work for the kid because she was pregnant.
Yeah, she's like, it's okay that my husband has drilled a hole into our home so he can watch another couple have sex. That's fine. No. We can work it out.
Yeah, it's fine. He's not going to do it again. So, in December of 1974, Linda gave birth to the couple's first child, a daughter named Sasha. I actually really like the name. I fucking love the name Sasha. It also reminds me of Sasha Velour.
And Sasha Colby.
Yeah. We love a drag queen.
Yeah.
Robert was inspired being a new daddy.
You.
And he dropped out of college to start working full-time to support his family. So Linda's dad worked as a corrections officer at the Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla.
In Walla Walla.
Walla Walla. I have a side note on that. I'm going to pull a Scarlet, a little side quest.
Oh, okay.
So Matt, who is Kayla's ex-husband, baby daddy.
Okay.
His dad works as a corrections officer in Ohio.
In Walla Walla?
No, in Ohio. They're from Ohio. But me and Matt were moving Kayla's shit this weekend.
Yeah.
And he was telling me that when he was little or younger at some point, he had gotten grounded and in trouble. So he was watching like cop shows, Locked Up, all that shit with his dad while he was grounded and couldn't do anything else. So he learned how to make a shank on TV. So he did it. He tried it. And I just thought that was funny.
Out of what? Like a toothbrush?
I think so.
that's fun. Education.
Yes.
Educational TV.
And his right dad there. Found it, and he's like, what the fuck? And Matt's like, well, I made a shank. So at least we know that Matt would do slightly okay in prison.
I'm basically in prison, Dad.
Dad.
I'm making a shank.
I could see Ray making a shank, just to be spiteful. Gotcha. But, yeah, so.
Oh, I thought you meant my father.
What?
I thought you meant my...
Oh, your dad. No, my, Ray. Ray. Raylan. Not Ray, Ray.
Oh, that was funny.
Raylan okay. would make a shank if we grounded her.
Oh my god, okay.
But anyway, father-in-law was a corrections officer for 18 years. He got Robert doing a job doing the same thing in July 1975. It was short-lived, though. He only worked there for a few months before he quit and gave, like, no explanation to his family or bosses as to why he was quitting. But that would be uncovered years later.
Oh, okay.
Moving on to the murders.
Oh boy.
On July 13th, 1975, which is around the same time he got his job at the prison.
Oh, okay. All right.
21-year-old Patrick Oliver and 22-year-old Susan Savage were spending some time together at Mill Creek Park in Walla Walla. The two were really close friends and just catching up because Patrick had returned from studying abroad and Susan just graduated from Washington State.
Aww, it's besties.
Cute. They're either besties or besties.
Yeah, well, it's hard to say.
So, Robert was also in the park. Robert approached the couple, shooting Patrick 3 times. One bullet hitting him directly in the heart and shooting Susan twice, oh. One directly into her head. Oh. Robert tried to cover his tracks by taking Susan's clothes off and placing her body on top of Patrick's in like a suggestive kind of way. Then he placed an old tire on top of the dead bodies and covered them up with leaves and an army sleeping bag. Like, that's like a half-assed job of that. So yeah. Like, I feel like that was like his first murder. And he was like, oh shit, oh fuck, what did I just do? And then, like, tried to, you know,
cover it up a little bit.
Yeah, on the fly. Psychologists later thought he did this to pose the bodies in a way that acted out his own sexual fantasies, and that this was his first murder. So, it's possible. He was just, like, trying to figure out his methods and perfect them.
Yeah, and didn't he have some, like, I'm sure we'll get to it, but wasn't he kind of, like, into dead bodies? Like, into... Yeah.
Kinda. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So both Patrick and Susan's family were a little alarmed that they didn't come home for dinner. But they're both adults. They're like, oh, we'll wait a little bit before we get too worried. Because, you know, they haven't seen each other in a while. Maybe they're just spending a little more time together.
Yeah.
The next day, Dan, Patrick's brother, went looking for him and headed to Mill Creek Park after one of the family members said that they might have gone there. Since it was one of their, like, favorite childhood spots.
Oh.
So Dan came upon the strange staging of the debris covering the bodies on the edge of the creek. And he went to the police to report the murder of his brother and his brother's girlfriend.
No.
And what he discovered at the park.
Oh, his own brother.
Mm-hmm. Imagine, like, okay, I'm just going to go to the park, see if they're, you know, there. Maybe they got hurt.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, man.
So, investigators had no leads at the time, and the investigation stayed open for an entire decade. And it was never actually solved until Robert confessed to the crime.
10 years?
10 years.
Wow.
Officers didn't even have him on the suspect list, and the case probably would have gone unsolved if he hadn't confessed to it years later when he was, you know, convicted of the other murders.
He was elusive.
Yeah.
He was squirrely.
He was a sneaky little bastard. After the corrections officer job didn't work out, Robert got a job working as a janitor at the hospital his mom worked at. I guess we're just going and getting jobs where our parents work because we can't get our own jobs. I don't know. His mother was the housekeeping supervisor, and the family moved back to Robert's hometown of Oak Harbor to be closer to his mom, who was battling cancer.
Oh, well, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
He killed a lot of people.
He killed a lot of people. I can't really feel bad for him.
And she raised him, so yeah. Here we are.
Sucks to suck.
Yeah.
Shortly after arriving in 1976 of July, Linda and Robert had a second wedding. A real one this time. It was a small ceremony with just the fam, but now Linda could officially take Robert's last name.
Oh, well, that's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
You gotta change that last name.
Heartbreak soon hits the family after the wedding on October 9th, 1976, when Robert's mother, Anna Mae, passed away after her battle with cancer.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Okay.
So Robert and his childhood best friend, Al Gotti, were pallbearers at the funeral. Gotti told the Seattle Times that the loss of Robert's mother was devastating, but not too devastating.
What?
Because boys aren't attached to their mothers like girls are. It doesn't throw us over the edge to lose them.
Huh?
I was like,
what?
bro, are you fucked up too? Like, what did your mom do to you?
And isn't the saying, like, mama's boys?
Yeah.
What?
It's not daddy's boys, it's mama's boys. Just ask Dustin Branton.
Right?
So, the following year, in 1977, Linda gave birth to the couple's second child, a daughter named Sonia.
Sonia?
I like that name too.
Wow. You know,
later that year, on October 4th, 1977, October 4th is my Willa's birthday, by the way.
Oh.
Robert enlisted in the U.S. Army.
Oh, that's late.
Mm-hmm. He was 25, though, so not super late, but much later than normal, I think. I feel like if you go into the Army in, like, the 70s, you're, like, 18 or 20.
Yeah, or 16 or 17, and yeah. Lying about your age.
Yeah. He was 25 at the time, making him one of the older recruits. Within 3 years, in 1980, Robert reached his goal and was chosen to train as an Army pilot.
Hey, that's the place to be. Mm-hmm. Warrant officer, they make the big bucks.
Mm-hmm.
That should be everyone's goal. It wasn't my goal.
Well, you signed up on accident.
I did.
It doesn't count.
I accidentally joined.
Did I accidentally join the Army? So, in July 1980, Robert was sent to Fort Rucker in Alabama to start his Warrant Officer Candidate School, which is the Army's aviation center.
Yep.
They start pilots on helicopters before planes, I guess because they're smaller, right? Makes sense.
I guess so. I don't know.
And Robert soon became a highly skilled helicopter pilot. He was safe and knowledgeable as a pilot. From 1980 to 1984, Robert was stationed in Germany, and Linda and the girls remained back in Washington, and Robert would just use his leave to come visit him, or come visit them.
Hmm.
Which I thought was weird. Why wouldn't you want your family to go over to Germany with you? For 4 years, like, you have to live away from your family?
That's a long time.
That's a really... I can't see, so, Kayla's dad's in the Air Force, he's a chief. Mm-hmm. I cannot see him being stationed in another country and not wanting his family there.
Yeah.
Or like at least his wife.
And the kids are young.
Yeah.
Still.
So, during his leave, Linda gave birth to their third daughter, Amber, in 1980, and their fourth daughter, Michelle, in 1984.
Wow.
It's a lot of girls.
A lot of girls.
A lot of girls.
Might say too many girls in one house.
Yeah, so literally as soon as he gets on leave, he gets his wife pregnant, and then he comes home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's just visiting every 9 months or so.
Yeah, and he's like, all right, time for another one.
God, that's so weird.
So Robert and Linda continued keeping their lives basically completely separate. I mean, he's in Germany, she's in Washington. Robert served in the military stationed elsewhere, and Linda raised the girls back in Washington by herself. From all accounts, it seemed the couple and the family were happy, just
not
together.
Together?
Weird. Very strange. Robert didn't talk about his wife to his coworkers, and most of them didn't even know he was married, only that he had kids. Because he talked about his kids, didn't talk about his wife.
Yeah, because you can't be letting that secret out if you're porking on the weekends.
Yeah. I think he was one of those guys that, like, sees his children as, like, extensions of himself, and that's why he loved them, not because, like, he loved them unconditionally.
Yeah.
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 In 1984, Robert became a flight instructor at Fort Rucker in Alabama. Linda and the girls stayed with Robert for a short time after he got his promotion in Alabama, but she and the children eventually made the move back to Walla Walla, Washington, to be closer to the family. Linda and the girls struggled financially, and eventually the couple reunited in 1988, but Linda stayed in Washington. In July of 1988, Robert used leave to go home and visit Linda and the girls. Robert made a little excursion out of the house, a little field trip.
Yep.
And he met a 23-year-old girl named Stacy Elizabeth Hahn, who was a sex worker.
Oh boy, here we go.
There's not a lot of clarity on what happened when Stacy met up with Robert, but Stacy's body would be recovered by authorities months later on December 28th, 1988, outside of Mount Vernon. She had been shot once, close range, into the head. And originally, authorities thought that she could have been a victim of Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer. Because they were operating in the same area at the same time.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
What are the odds?
It's very rare.
Of two serial killers
operating at the same time in the same area.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Robert eventually confesses to Stacy's murder as well after he was caught. Because they didn't know it was him until he confessed to it.
God, that just goes to his sneakiness again.
He's a fucking
snake. He was never suspected.
Nope. Ugh. He's just an average-looking dude in the Army.
And he's got a wife, a few kids, he's in the military, he's a pilot, got a good job.
Yeah, he's an upstanding citizen by all accounts.
Yeah. Pillar of the community, if you will.
Besides the murder.
Well.
Maybe not that. In 1988, the army stationed Robert back in Germany again, and he stayed there until 1991. There's no concrete proof that he killed while he was there, but he remains a suspect for 26 unsolved homicides there.
26?
26 over 3 years.
Oh my. You know it was all him.
Yeah, that's like...
He had everyone around him snowed.
Uh-huh. There's like, that's like eight-ish a year. Uh-huh.
In rapid succession. Yeah. Oh my god.
In 1989, Linda gave birth to their fifth child, a baby boy.
The son he always wanted, I'm sure.
Named Kyle.
Kyle.
Also, ew. Kyle, that name reminds me of a kid that, like, bites people, drinks Monster, like the original Green Monster, and, like, puts holes in drywall.
Yeah. Fucking Kyle. Okay.
Being the only boy, he got a lot of attention from his dad, a lot more than his sisters did after he was born. And Robert began to neglect his daughters in favor of Kyle.
Yep.
Either way, Robert wasn't home often since he was always away from the army. He returned to the U.S. in 1991 and started serving as a flight instructor at the Fort Drum military base in New York. He was also a part of the Air Assault Helicopter Division, and he would go on several missions with his team.
Hmm, that's cool.
During one mission in December of 1992, he was serving... Wait, when that you were born? 92?
I was one.
You were one. Okay.
91.
Your birthday.
My birthday.
Your birthday mission. He was serving as part of an Operation Restore Hope in Somalia. Robert and some of his fellow army buddies were getting sick of eating MREs.
Hashtag relatable.
Yep. And decided they want to have some barbecue, just to mix it up a little. They wanted some, like, actual food.
Yeah.
So Robert jumped into one of the helicopters and flew over the forest, taking aim and shooting at a wild boar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't be doing that.
It sounds like a movie. Yeah. Like a shitty army movie. The rest of the squad went to get the pig, and instead of getting into trouble for negligently flying the helicopter, it became a huge joke and like a fond memory for everybody involved. Like, oh yeah, you remember that one time Robert killed a fucking pig?
Yep, that's just all, old Yates.
It's just old Robbie.
What Yates does.
Oh, damn Bobby. So one of his fellow soldiers told the Seattle Times that he was court-martialed for not going through the proper channels.
Of flying the helicopter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But nothing even came of it. Nothing at all. I think they just, like, brushed it under the rug. They're like, you know, he's a decorated army pilot. Yeah. He's such a good guy. Got a nice family.
It's just Bob being Bob.
Yeah. Bobby's just a little weird. So some psychologists see this act as Robert's violent tendencies starting to show, since, you know, if a person is willing to hurt or kill an animal, they're more likely to hurt a human in the future.
Yeah, and he already had the childhood arson and animal abuse.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
In 1994, Robert was promoted to a pilot that trained Army aviation instructors, and he was only one of 10 pilots that were trained at that high of a level. It's impressive.
I mean, he was up there.
Yeah.
He was doing big things and being a very productive soldier.
And also killing women.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for the reminder.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
One of his trainees, Miles Merrill, said that Robert was very methodical, patient, and quiet. Merrill would spend 7 to 8 hours with Robert every day during his training, and Robert would mention his children, but never brought up his wife, Linda. And Merrill just assumed that he was a single dad and never asked any questions about it.
Yeah. You can't let your buddies know that you're cheating on your wife.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a wife.
Right? Yeah. You're a single dad. A poor, poor single dad.
Yep.
In 1994, Robert would also purchase his 1977 white Corvette.
Oh.
Which becomes a very important fact later on.
Keep that in your mind.
Yep. Linda, during a trip to visit Robert, attended an army party with him and got to see an entirely new side of her husband that she was not used to experiencing, since she lived away from him most of the time.
Yep.
Robert drank excessively and flirted with other women at the party, and he had the nickname James Bond from some of his army buddies.
Oh, it's so creepy.
It's fucking disgusting.
Gross.
Especially in front of your wife. Linda was shocked at this outrageous behavior from her husband, because again, she's not used to it, but she tolerated it because of his salary from the army, supporting the family, and she needed it.
Well, yeah. She had 5 kids.
Yeah. Plus, she was still living in Washington full time, so she didn't have to put up with it all the time, because he was in Alabama.
Yep.
So, you know, I think the living the apart thing, that kind of works well.
Yeah.
During his time as the flight instructor in Alabama, the timeline matched up with the murder of a 19-year-old Tarion Corbett, who was killed on August 10th,
1995. Oh, 19.
Ugh. Corbett was last seen about 20 miles away from Fort Rucker and was discovered a day later on August 11th, 1995, near the banks of the Chickatawatchee River.
Choctawhatchee?
What? Is that how you say it?
Choctawhatchee?
Whatever.
That was so good. I'm leaving it.
Not the Chattahoochee River.
Not the Chattahoochee.
Not the head of Chattahoochee. She suffered several gunshot wounds to the head from a .45 caliber pistol.
Oh my God.
It's like they say, I can say the word however I want when I'm reading. So that's what I do.
It's in your own head.
It's in my own head.
No one can hear it.
Yeah. Autism speaks to me. At the time, police thought the murder could have had a connection to someone at Fort Rucker based on the close proximity, but it was just a hunch and they didn't have any like concrete evidence of it.
Yeah.
Decades later, Robert was considered a suspect in this murder after he was convicted of his other murders. He was never formally charged with this one, though, due to the lack of evidence in the case.
Which is interesting because maybe it wasn't him because he claimed those other two after years and it was unsolved. So maybe it wasn't him.
Yeah.
Possibly.
On August 18th, 1995, Robert graduated from an instructor pilot course at Fort Rucker and was also given the Master Army Aviator badge to symbolize his 15 years as a military helicopter pilot.
God, that is so impressive.
Yeah.
For such a piece of trash.
Shit. Yeah. Shortly after the Army was making some cutbacks, and Robert accepted an incentive to retire early after 18 years of service, which was kind of shocking to all his coworkers because he was only 2 years shy of his 20-year mark and the ability to receive full benefits.
Yeah, stick it out for 24 more months.
A little weird.
Hmm.
It's speculated that Robert left the Army due to the pressure of Corbett's murder, and he saw this as a way to get out of Alabama and away from prying eyes. So he's like, okay, maybe I can just retire right now, get the fuck out of Dodge, and no one will suspect me.
Interesting. But, like, I also feel like he didn't do that one.
I don't know.
Or maybe something would lead people to think he maybe did do that one, but he actually didn't, but he had murdered people in the past.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Robert's retirement deal from the Army included receiving 45% of his annual pay, which was around $20,000.
Damn. And if you just stay two more years.
Yeah.
Full benefits.
Yep. Hmm. Robert returned home to Washington and bought a home in Spokane in the neighborhood of South Hill, which was coincidentally very, very close to the red light district.
Ah.
East Sprague Avenue.
Don't we have a Sprague Avenue?
We have a Sproul Avenue.
Oh, Sproul. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Yep.
Yep.
Which is essentially the same kind of place.
Yep.
Linda and Robert tried to rekindle the love in their marriage, but that didn't work out, and Linda decided to stay with Robert to make it easier on the kids, because they loved being around their dad. Because apparently he was a really great dad. But a lot of these guys are.
Yeah.
But according to one of his daughters, this wasn't the case.
Oh.
Apparently old Bobby was verbally abusive to his wife Linda, but he never actually got physical with her. All four of his daughters claim that their father was both physically and verbally abusive to all of them. And he had a very short temper and would snap at the smallest inconvenience.
There it is.
Yep.
Comes out around the family, but around everyone else, he's a great guy.
He's an upstanding dad.
Mm-hmm.
But where he's comfortable at home, he's going to be a piece of shit that he is.
Yep.
So I think Linda was staying so that she didn't, you know, get murdered or, like, risk her kids getting hurt even more than they were now.
Yeah.
It's my theory. But I can understand why she liked living separate from him.
Oh, 100%.
I would, too.
Yeah.
Robert started looking for a new job and found one working at Pantrol Inc. They assembled electronic instruments with heavy machinery. Robert was a really hard worker. He's quiet, kept to himself, per usual.
Yeah.
Nothing different about that. Robert used all this newfound free time, though, to pick up a new hobby. Cars.
He's a car guy.
Vroom, vroom.
Gross.
He purchased 3 vehicles that he worked on in the family's front yard, and he was well known in the neighborhood for working on his cars and cleaning them incessantly.
I can't stand a car guy.
I feel like he was autistic.
I hate hyper-focused.
Hyper-focused. One day in 1996, Sonia, who was now 19, was going through her dad's address book and noticed that there were a lot of women's names and addresses in them that she didn't recognize.
Oh.
And what does our good girl, Sonia, do? She decides to make some calls to these random women.
I love that.
That's something Sugar would do. That is 100% something Sugar would do. She'd be like,
so
what the fuck is this? And she would start calling them. They all claim that they didn't know who Robert was, and when Sonia confronted her father about it, he told her that he was buying used car parts from them. Which she found strange, since none of the women claimed to even know who he was.
And, like, why are there several women selling several car parts and no men?
I don't think so.
What? That's a lie.
So Linda started getting really suspicious as well, because money began disappearing from their bank accounts. Because Robert kept withdrawing large amounts of cash from the ATMs. When she confronted him about this and his, you know, spending habits, he told her to get a job if she was so worried about it.
Ew.
Fucking God. Piece of shit.
She has 5 children.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And she's taking care of all of them.
Ugh.
Linda also found Robert's spank bank. Which included several magazines of people having orgies and various sexual fantasies, as well as like a scrap paper mixed in that had a list of names and phone numbers of people who'd met who were interested in group sex.
And then she just still...
She was hanging in there. Stay together for the kids, as Blink-182 would say.
Ugh, don't do it.
Robert and Linda still remained sexually active with one another, even though the love of their marriage wasn't there anymore. But that started to cause problems too, and Robert told Linda he wanted to start taking Viagra because he felt he was impotent. But, like, it's because he was having sex with her but not murdering her, so, like, that's why he's not getting off.
She was still alive.
Yeah. So. She's not bleeding, so, you know.
Ugh, so weird.
Yeah, and, like, he has, like, dark sexual fantasies, and she's not doing that. He also asked Linda if she would ever be interested in bringing in another woman to the, you know, relationship. Mm. And Linda just took this as Robert confirming he was getting sexual pleasure from outside of their marriage.
Yeah.
Which she was probably okay with.
She already knew that.
She already fucking knew that. It just confirmed it for her.
Yeah.
Robert eventually left his job at Pantrol when business slowed down and took another one at the Kaiser Aluminum Processing Plant.
Hmm. He was one of weird jobs. But like, I know. The military. But like, so many.
Well, they probably hired him because, like, they're like, oh, military. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'd think that would be the case.
Yes. Well, not for you.
Yeah. I applied to 40,000 jobs.
Well, you're not a man.
That's true. My goddamn lady brain.
She can't do this damn job. So, he was one of the oldest guys that worked at the plant and served as sort of like a father figure for the fellow guys that worked there, which is also just gross.
Hate that.
His colleagues said that he was a nice guy and got along with everyone, and they saw him as a big family guy because he liked to talk about his kids.
Mm-hmm.
His kids that he abused.
Yep.
Robert was also said to have been a really hard worker and just like his previous jobs.
Yeah.
1996 is when Robert started visiting the notorious East Sprigg Avenue.
Here we go.
Which is where he would find majority of his victims. It was also known as the track. The area was crime riddled, and most sex workers had their turf there as well. Usually there was about 30 sex workers working that area on any given night, and it was not uncommon for them to go missing or turn up murdered. So it's the perfect spot for good old Bobbert.
Bobbert.
God damn it, Bobby.
Oh, that's terrible.
38-year-old Shannon Zielinski became one of Robert's first East Sprigg Avenue victims. She was last seen on May 27th, 1996, and Zielinski was a frequent heroin user and mother to a 20-year-old daughter.
Oh.
She had a criminal record for drug possession and theft charges. June 14th, 1996, two boys found Zielinski's body near their school bus stop. I know.
Damn.
They had noticed a funky, funky smell for the last few days. And since it was the last day of school, they're like, well, this is our last chance to go figure out what it is. So they stumbled upon her body, and she was wearing a gray dress that she was last seen in and covered in maggots with leaves and, like, pine needles over her body. And a blue towel was placed over her body in an attempt to conceal the body. They noticed a pair of pantyhose, socks, and high black boot near the body as well. The teens ran home and called the police immediately to report what they had found. They brought Sheriff Deputy Brent Garrett to where the body was. Another detective, Rick Grabenstein, examined the crime scene and determined that Zielinski was probably killed somewhere else and then dumped there, since the dump site didn't show any signs of a struggle. Zielinski had 2 gunshot wounds, one to each side of the head. Officers attempted to get a semen sample from the body, but it was too decomposed to get DNA. No ID, wallet, or purse was left at the dump site, and they used fingerprinting to identify her. Dr. Haskell, a forensic entomologist, used the maggots to determine the date of Zielinski's death. This would end up being a really crucial part of the evidence and created a timeline for her murder. Dr. Haskell was able to identify the maggots to black blowfly maggots. He studied the maggots and used temperature to determine the time of death for Zielinski, which was either May 26th or 27th, 1996, which also fit for the last time that she was seen. A shell casing was also found near the body from a .25 caliber gun. Robert would use this same gun in several other murders as well. The detective on the case was familiar with Zielinski due to arresting her several times for drugs on East Sprigg and told her mother, Shannon, about the murder. Robert was not identified as a suspect in Zielinski's case at first, and their top suspect was a drug dealer that she had recently ripped off and a murder suspect named JoJo Andrews, where she was a witness for the prosecution. A few months later, Robert came home one morning after being gone all night with blood all over the back of the family van. Linda was obviously alarmed when she saw the blood covering the family vehicle, and he told her that he had run over a dog with the van and driven it to the vet. Linda supposedly believed this story and did not question it any further.
Come on, Linda.
Listen, Linda. Almost a year to the date from this retirement from the Army, Robert joined the National Guard at age 45 with the goal of flying helicopters again.
Wow, I'm surprised they let him rejoin.
I know.
He's an old man at this point.
Yeah.
Damn.
Robert went through training once a month in Tacoma and was very qualified to do so. Mm-hmm. He also had to pass his medical checks as well, and some of kind of ailment or injury in his physical exam made doctors keep him grounded for an entire year from 1997, April, until the following spring in 1998.
I'm sure he wasn't soups happy about that.
No, he's probably even more angsty than he was before.
Huh.
On the front, Robert seemed completely engaged and dedicated to flying again, and you wouldn't have even known about his little bruised ego, about not being able to fly. But this year-long span is when he committed the majority of his murders, and it's a fair assumption that he did so because of all the angst he was feeling about not being allowed to fly.
You know, I wonder why he didn't become, like, a commercial pilot?
I know, he would have been perfectly qualified to do so.
And he'd be lives traveling to all these different places
where he could murder people.
Yeah.
And, why? Like, he's already in Washington. Go work for, like, the Alaskan Airlines or Delta.
Yeah.
Fucking whatever.
He could have worked anywhere and then gotten away with this all over the world.
Yeah, and did it.
That's so strange.
Not smart, Robert.
And, like, he is smart. So, like,
I don't know why he didn't think of that.
I mean, if you can be in the military, you can be a commercial pilot.
Yeah.
Like, it's, there's nothing... I don't know.
Yeah. So now we're at that one-year span where he murdered 11 victims.
Oh, my God.
All presumably sex workers or women that had fallen on hard times. Some of his victims had only lived in Spokane for a short time period, which made it even more difficult for investigators to identify who they were or find any leads as to who would want to murder them.
Yeah.
Robert Yates and his family were still living in that suburb of South Hill, close to East Sprigg, and it was not uncommon for Robert to take a hiatus out of the family home and go to East Sprigg in search of a sex worker when he was feeling bored or angsty. Which I'm sure his family was not was pretty okay with, because it meant he's not in the house torturing them.
Yeah.
You know, he's out doing whatever.
Yeah, like, fine, go for 2 weeks. I don't care where you go, just get out of here.
Yep. So Jennifer Joseph was his next victim. Her body was found shot in the head in an abandoned lot in Spokane. She would not have been considered a high-risk victim because she came from a loving family and was an Army brat. But life took a downward spiral for Jennifer when her parents got divorced when she was 16 years old. Divorce is never easy.
Yeah.
Jennifer dropped out of high school shortly after this and got hooked on meth and started working as a sex worker when she met her boyfriend slash pimp, Marlon, at a house party. After meeting Marlon, she moved in with him to a shady hotel in Spokane, and because at the time she was living with her dad, and the two of them fought constantly and couldn't even get along.
Yeah.
She's like, whatever, I'm gonna go live with my boyfriend, Marlon.
Even though he
pimps me out. She was a very popular worker on East Sprigg because she was part Korean, and many of her johns sought her out because she looked exotic.
Ew.
Gross. She used the stage name Jennifer Kim to even, like, play into the exotic role.
Yeah.
Which probably got her more money. She had only lived in Spokane for a month when she was killed by Robert Yates at age 16. A baby. But she told all the other women she worked with on East Sprigg that she was 19. Robert picked up Jennifer on East Sprigg in his white Corvette, drove her to a secluded area where the two of them had sex, and after they were finished, he waited for her to look away and shot her in the head twice with a gun that he had stored under his driver's seat.
God. 16!
A baby.
And she thought she had to live that way to just be alive.
Yep.
That's so sad.
When Jennifer didn't return back to the motel, Marlon assumed that Jennifer had left him for another man, and he moved back to Tacoma, where he was living before. 10 days later, on August 26, 1997, two farmers discovered Jennifer's body in an empty field near their farm, covered with brush. He loves covering these bodies with random shit that he finds on the ground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a signature, I guess.
Yeah. So now we're on to Heather Hernandez. She had just recently moved to Spokane and was arrested twice for sex work within the few weeks that she lived there. Heather's body was found in an abandoned lot in Spokane on August 26, 1997.
Oh, same day.
Yep, same day. Hmm. She was found by a homeless Vietnam veteran who was foraging through the trash to look for cans to sell. Heather was last seen on August 23, 1997, when she got into a white 1988 Chevy van with a man.
Oh, a van.
A van.
I thought it was Corvette.
Well, family. He does have a white Corvette.
Oh, it's the family car.
It's the family car.
The one that he hit, quote unquote, hit the dog.
Hit the dog with, yeah.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, so remember the 1974 white Chevy Corvette that was his life and joy and all happiness?
Yeah.
Well, he got pulled over by an officer in 1997 for failing to signal when he was making a turn. The officer, the officer had been tailing Robert for a few blocks because he noticed his vehicle matched the one linked to the murder of Jennifer Joseph.
Oh.
So he was waiting for Robert to make a mistake and have an excuse to pull him over. Yep.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Instead of giving him a ticket, the officer just politely chatted with him about his car and how excellent the condition of the vehicle was because he's trying to poke him for some information. He got Robert's full name and sent Robert on his way and told him to have a good night. You would think that this is a good thing and that they finally have a lead to go on.
Yeah.
Except there's a little bit of a clerical error.
Oh, God.
Officers were supposed to be keeping an eye out for a white 1970s Corvette in connections with the recent murders of the sex workers, which is why he pulled her over.
Yeah.
But instead of writing Corvette in his notes, he wrote Camaro. So that's what went down in his report. So his report never made it to the detectives working the case, because that's not the vehicle they were looking for. They're like, oh, okay, that's the wrong car. Ditch it.
God damn it.
I feel like that shit happens all the time
with
these guys.
It sure does. It's like one stupid little mistake.
Yeah.
And.
So Robert got to stay free and clear for an entire year and a half, and he would claim 9 more victims between the time he was pulled over by that officer and when he was finally apprehended. Imagine how much guilt that officer has that made that clerical error.
Because I'm sure Robert is very friendly and conversational, and
just
he was
nice...
just talking to him and just didn't even think whenever he was writing it down
that
he was getting it wrong.
Yep.
Ugh.
So his next victim was 29-year-old sex worker Darla Scott. Mm. Robert had actually solicited sex from Darla multiple times before, and she knew that he tended to get a little violent. But since he paid so well and tipped so well, and he also gave her drugs, she kind of just let it slide. Darla was picked up by Robert from her on and off again boyfriend Arthur's house, and he remembers her leaving his home wearing his Mickey Mouse t-shirt. Before shooting Darla in the head, he had sexual intercourse with her and attempted to dispose her body in a creek in Spokane. At first, he tried to bury Darla in a shallow grave, but he got lazy during the process because digging a grave's not easy.
It's hard.
It's hard.
Takes a lot of motivation.
And he left half of her body exposed out of the grave, including her head and one of her legs. And the road that Darla's body was found on was called Hangman's Valley Road.
Hangman's Valley?
Yeah, it sounds weird. So, on November 1st, 1997, Harold Lebsock was walking his dog when his dog kept pulling him towards the direction of Darla's body.
Oh, God.
Which is what Duck does when she smells something real good.
You gotta follow her.
Yeah, she always finds good shit. Usually it's a dead animal, but she usually finds it.
Yeah.
Harold's dog continued to do this on his walk for 5 more days until he went to investigate the smell with his dog on November 5th and discovered Darla. Always listen to the dog.
Oh my God.
Arthur was able to identify the Mickey Mouse t-shirt that Darla was wearing and gave a positive ID.
The Mickey Mouse shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have a Mickey Mouse shirt.
Of course you do.
You know, it's the one that looks
identical.
Oh,
the one they got from like Etsy or whatever.
Yeah. Sorry.
On December 7th, 1997, Melinda Mercer, who was 24, was found shot and dumped in a field in Tacoma. Ugh. She had been shot several times and had four plastic grocery bags covering her head.
There it is.
There it is.
God.
Later, at Yates' trial, it was revealed that even after she was shot in the head, Mercer had chewed through two of the bags before succumbing to her injuries. So she was fighting. She was fucking fighting.
God.
Mercer did not have a criminal record nor any ties to sex work and reportedly worked as a waitress.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's ballsy for him.
Yeah, so he probably lured her into his car by something else.
Yeah, or hitching a ride or something.
Yeah. Because it is December, so maybe it was cold and she was walking to work or whatever.
Yeah.
On November 22nd, 1997, Linda Mabin was talking to her friend Brian about the Spokane serial killer and how she was terrified that she could be the next victim and that she also had a gut feeling she knew who could be behind this.
Oh, and we're talking about her, so I'm assuming...
Brian...
Oh, Alex. Oh my God.
Brian knew about Linda's frequent drug use and thought she was just being overly paranoid and didn't take her too seriously. Later on, they were supposed to meet for dinner at their usual diner, but Linda still hadn't shown up after an hour of waiting. Brian got really worried and rushed over to her apartment to check on her, running through, like, worst-case scenarios in his head.
Yeah.
Because she had a drug problem, so he probably thought she overdosed. Thankfully, Linda did open the door and apologize that she had fallen asleep. Brian waited for her to get ready for dinner, and on their way out, Linda saw one of her regular Johns, a man named Robert Yates. Robert asked Linda for a date, and she told Brian she'd be back in about 20 minutes, but she never came back.
Oh, Linda, she called it.
She did.
She literally called her own death.
She did.
God.
Brian told investigators he had a bad feeling in his gut from the moment he laid eyes on Robert, but he couldn't stop Linda from going, because he tried. Because he even offered to, like, pay for dinner to, like, cover the cost of what her date would be.
Oh.
Robert ended up circling back to Brian and told him that Linda, after their date, had hit the street to take some more Johns, and he never saw her again.
So wait, he went back to
He went back to Brian.
His house?
He went back to Linda's apartment, where Brian was waiting. Yeah, and he was like, hey, listen, Linda told me to tell you that she's going to take a few more Johns. She'll talk to you tomorrow.
That's terrifying.
Ballsy.
I hate that. Oh my God.
Linda's body wouldn't be discovered for several months during the first week of April. She would be found dumped less than 100 yards from two other victims. Robert had shot Linda in the head three times and wrapped her head in four plastic grocery bags, presumably to keep the blood out of his car. Because God forbid you get blood in your precious car.
In your prized...
fucking...
whatever
Corvette.
Yes.
He dumped her in a field in Tacoma, similar to the other bodies, which investigators thought was strange because Linda lived in Seattle, which was 45 minutes away.
Hmm.
Investigators theorized that whoever killed Linda did so in Spokane or Seattle, then dumped her body in Tacoma to distract the police.
Oh.
They immediately noticed similarities between Linda's case and the ones happening in Spokane, but before they could link Robert to the crimes, he had left Tacoma and was staying in Spokane at home with his family over the Christmas holidays.
So he's trying to branch out to evade.
Yeah, because Tacoma is where he does his...
drill.
His drill. So he's like, okay, like, I'm just going to... do some shit out here, because it's farther away from home.
Yeah.
And I'm less likely to get pointed fingers at.
Yeah, and I feel like if you kill too many people in one area...
they're going to start looking at you.
But, I mean, he was so under the radar.
Yeah, he's just a nice army pilot. He retired, he's got some kids, nice wife.
Ugh.
On December 16th, 1997, back in Spokane, Robert left his home to go Christmas shopping for the family. But he made a little pit stop before doing so to East Sprigg Avenue. This is when he comes upon 36-year-old Sean Johnson. Robert recognized Sean from his previous trips to East Sprigg, but never actually went on a date with her before.
Mm.
Robert knew immediately that after she got into the car that he was going to kill her.
Yeah, I'm sure he knew that with all of them.
Probably.
I wonder if there was any that he didn't kill.
Probably. I mean, maybe he just wasn't feeling it. Like, they didn't get it off for him or whatever, which is disgusting.
Ugh.
Because there was a couple that he had gone on dates several times before and didn't kill them, but then he ended up killing them on later dates.
Yeah.
So maybe he just had to be in a murderous mood. He waited until the two were in the middle of intercourse before shooting her in the head twice. He wrapped plastic bags around her head to contain the blood and drove her out of the city towards the sewage plant and threw her over the embankment. Robert assumed the foul odor emitting from the sewage plant would prevent anyone from finding her body for a while, since it would cover up the body decay stench.
Yeah, because the dog caught the last one.
Yeah, can't let that happen again.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for Robert, this didn't work out like he wanted, and Sean's body was discovered just 2 days later by a maintenance worker at the sewage plant. After this, investigators formed a task force, the Serial Killer Homicide Task Force.
Love a good task force.
Love it. Maybe a better name for that, though.
Yeah, it's very plain.
Yeah. They were more than convinced that all the sex worker murders were connected, and they needed to allocate as many resources as possible to finding the killer. Unfortunately, the biggest obstacle that the investigators faced was the media.
Of course. It's always the goddamn media.
It's always
the
goddamn media.
They break stories too soon. They give false information.
They tell the fucking murderer that they're after him.
Yeah, they're reading the paper.
Yeah, they do dumb shit all the time. So the media kept calling the crimes the prostitute murders.
Oh.
Their words, not mine.
Yeah.
So, like, this wasn't helping the investigators get any empathy from the public.
Yeah.
They're like,
they're just sex workers.
You know?
They're asking for it.
Everybody finds them less than human, so we should too. This one I couldn't find as much info on as, like, the other murders, but around Christmas time, he murdered Lori Wason, who was 31 at the time. Lori was a mother to a 12-year-old boy and had gotten into sex work to pay for her heroin habit. She had relapsed after 6 years of sobriety. Before sex work, Lori had worked breeding Rottweilers and also operated an adult family home that was licensed by the state. Robert dumped Lori's body in a ditch and wrapped her head in plastic bags after shooting her.
Again with the grocery bags.
Yeah. And all around Christmas time, too. Because on Christmas Eve, 1997...
Yeah, he had a little spree here where
Christmas,
it was, like, every day.
He must have been, like, on holiday break from the factory or something.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve, 1997, Robert was spending time at a home with his family when his wife sent him to the store to pick up some last-minute items for Christmas dinner. She's like, honey, go get the cloves, the ginger, the cranberry sauce. I need some more milk.
The stockings.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Robert headed out and found himself on East Sprigg Avenue, where he runs into 39-year-old Sean McClanahan, crying in the parking lot of a grocery store called Rainbow Foods. Robert invited her into his vehicle, and she wanted to vent to Robert about her struggles with sobriety and the hard time she was having getting a spot in a methadone clinic. She had recently been left by her husband and got hooked on heroin to help her cope with the pain of her heartbreak. Robert consoled Sean as a thank you. She performed oral sex on him, and they were going through the act. Robert shot her in the head twice.
God damn it.
He again wrapped her head in plastic bags and drove her to a lot on East 14th, where he dumped her into a ditch. Sean's body hit the ditch a little weird, so he jumped in to take a look at what happened and noticed that he had dumped Sean's body right onto Lori Wason's body.
The same place.
Yeah. Robert found this humorous and found it ironic that the bodies around him were, quote, literally stacking up. He's such
a
fucking piece of shit.
Foul human
that is
being.
Not funny. On Christmas morning, Robert ventured out of the house yet again. A fucking Christmas. You just murdered somebody the night before.
Yeah.
And now it's Christmas morning. He went out of the house again to East Sprigg Avenue and he met Sonny Oster, who was 41 at the time.
Sonny
had actually gotten out of rehab after completing her treatment from a cocaine addiction she had had since she was 17.
Oh, wow.
She was the mother of two sons who were both in their 20s, and at the time, the two boys reported her missing on December 24th after not hearing from her since the beginning of October when she got out of treatment. It's speculated that she could have been embarrassed and didn't want to reach out to her sons to tell them she fell off the wagon again, which is very likely.
Yeah, which is so sad.
Robert picked up Sonny, and after having sexual contact with her, he shot her in the head, wrapped her head in plastic bags, and dumped her body. She wouldn't be discovered until February 8th, 1998, by a group of people walking their dogs.
The dogs, once again.
Mm-hmm. 2 days later, Spokane PD was able to identify the body.
God, are we done yet with the murders?
No. Got a couple more.
God.
So Robert's next victim, Melody Murfin, wouldn't be discovered until Robert disclosed where he buried her and admitted to her murder in his confession. Around May 12th, 1998, Robert ran into Melody along East Sprigg, and they both knew of each other due to their relationships as John and a sex worker. Robert had actually been a client of a few of Melody's friends, and she also knew some of the women he had murdered as well. Along with sex work, Melody would perform little schemes here and there, like shoplifting or running scams to make money. Melody had two daughters with her ex-boyfriend. Both were in their father's custody. Robert picked up Melody in his white Corvette and killed her shortly after having sexual relations with her. But he didn't dump her body in one of his usual spots this time. Instead, he buried her in his lawn under his own bedroom window, and he planted flowers there to cover up the fresh dirt.
What?
Yeah.
Buried her in his own yard?
Yeah, which
with
is...
his children and his mm-hmm. wife?
Yep.
Wow.
Which is what Ed Kemper did with a body, too. He buried it under his mother's window.
He did. You know, I still have those notes typed up.
Oh, we still gotta do that one.
Still haven't done it.
We'll do that next week, folks.
Okay. Maybe not next week.
No. We can't do two gruesome ones back to back.
It'll be this year.
Yeah. We'll do it soon. Yeah. Psychologists think he did this as a form of control so he could continue to get sexual gratification by thinking about how close Melody's body was, especially since he's now, like, struggling to have sex with his wife.
That's so gross.
So even though officers didn't know who Melody was and didn't know she was dead yet, they didn't find out or know where her body was until they treated her as a missing case.
Mm-hmm.
But they assumed that she was linked to the Spokane serial killer.
Yeah.
Melody's missing person search was highly covered by the media, which spooked Robert into listing his Corvette for sale.
Oh, is this where we're gonna get caught?
Yeah, this is where we done fucked up, Aaron.
Don't do that. Oh, I'm so excited. Okay.
So, this spooked
Robert. This man needs to get caught. Yes. I need you to tell me.
So investigators are like, all right, we're gonna slip out that this man has a white Corvette, and we're gonna hope that he sells it, because he's spooked. Which he fucking does. So he listed the car for sale for $9,000, which was a really great price, and he immediately got the attention of a woman named Rita Jones.
Love Rita. Can we love Rita?
Rita's a badass bitch.
Okay.
So Rita appreciated the condition of the vehicle and how well it had been cared for by Robert.
Mm-hmm.
He had even mentioned to her that he installed new carpet into the vehicle not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Robert's...
Well, yeah, because it was blood-soaked.
Yeah.
Literally.
I wonder why he didn't install fucking new carpet. So Robert sold the car to Rita and transferred the ownership to her on May 4th, 1998. This didn't stop him from killing, though, and he just didn't want to be linked to the fucking car. He's like, I think it's going to get me caught. I got to sell it.
Yeah, just going to go out in my van, my family van from now on.
Yep. Micheline Durning would be his next victim after the sale of the white Corvette. So Miss Durning was supposed to go on a weekend trip with her friend Gregory Landis, but she never met up with him. Gregory said he wasn't too alarmed by this since she had done this a few times in the past, you know, just flaking on plans. She had a heroin problem and it would cause her to disappear and ghost everyone for days at a time, which is not uncharacteristic for an addict.
Yeah, or me, so.
Yeah. After Robert picked up and killed Micheline, he dumped her body close to the Kaiser Aluminum plant where he worked.
Yeah,
that's where he worked. Yep. So now he has a body near his house, and he has one near his work.
Yeah.
Investigators actually interviewed Robert and several other employees at the plant, but they had no red flags about him, because he's just a normal guy.
Yep.
He's just a regular dude.
Puts on a good show.
On August 1st, 1998, Robert picked up Christine Smith for oral sex on East Brigg Avenue. When she got into the car with him, she asked if he was the Spokane serial killer. She's like, bitch, are you a killer?
And like, he said, you're not gonna kill me, right?
And he said, no, I'm a respected National Guard Army pilot and father of five. So she had nothing to worry about with him. As she started to perform oral sex, Robert failed to get an erection after several minutes. Christine tried to console him, but she immediately felt a pain on her head and blood dripping down on her face and neck. She had just assumed that Robert hit her out of frustration about not being able to get it up. And she freaked out and fled the van. They were in the back seat, so she jumped over the console to the front and jumped out of the car. When she made it to the hospital, she was treated for a cut on the back of her head behind her ear. It looked so much like a cut or a knife would that doctors didn't even realize that it was a bullet wound at first, because the gunshot just grazed her head enough to cause the cut. It didn't actually get into her head.
So he did shoot her.
He did shoot her. It just looked like a cut. Yep.
God.
At first, Christine did not want to go to the police because she feared that they would not believe her and would arrest her for sex work.
Yeah, well, makes sense.
Yep. Robert was fully obsessed with sex, and because of his problems with erectile dysfunction, he had been taking Viagra for 2 years, an entire year prior to when his killing spree started. Around this same time, his wife Linda noticed charges to their cards for Al's Spa Tub Motel.
What?
And they charge rooms by the hour.
Al's Spa Tub Motel?
Yes.
What?
That's crazy. We know what this place is for. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a bathhouse. So when Linda confronted Robert about it, he told her that he was using the hot tubs for his sore muscles.
Okay. Okay. Okay, Bob.
Yep. Robert regularly used this place to bring back his sex workers.
Yeah.
He also started taking weekend hunting trips.
Okay.
He was picking up weekends with the National Guard so he could find victims in the Tacoma area, mm-hmm. which is where he meets 35-year-old Connie Ellis LaFontaine.
Oh, my God. We have to be approaching the end.
We are approaching the end.
Holy shit, hey, so many people.
Just buckle in.
Yeah.
Connie was a Native American and actually grew up on the Chippewa Turtle Mountain Reservation.
Aww.
Mm-hmm. Connie was previously a hairdresser, but fell into hard times when she developed a drug problem and started using sex work to supplement her drug problem.
Mm.
She had lost two of her children in her life, one as a baby to sudden infant death syndrome,
oh my God,
and the other to a heart condition when he was 11. That's just the worst fucking luck. She had also lost her mother around the same time as the death of her 11-year-old child.
Oh, poor Connie. Jesus.
She hadn't been seen for over a month and wasn't even reported missing when her body was discovered. She had been shot in the head and wrapped in plastic bags. Connie struggled with her sobriety for many years, and her father states the death of her children and her abusive marriage contributed greatly to her problems.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sad.
She, like, if it could go wrong, it went wrong for Connie.
Yeah. Ugh.
November 10th rolls around, and an officer patrolling saw a sex worker named Jennifer Robinson hop into a Honda Civic, and he tailed her.
Oh.
The officer ended up pulling the Honda Civic over, and Robert was the driver of this Civic.
Oh.
He told the officer he worked with her father, and he asked him to go find Jennifer and pick her up.
Okay.
And she backed up his story.
Oh.
She didn't want to get popped for sex work.
Oh. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Jennifer had no idea that she was sitting next to the Spokane serial killer, and they ended up being released from the officer without any further incident.
Oh, can you imagine? Like, you just met this person, you're like, hey, just play along.
Just play along, you got to, yeah, it's fine.
And then they do it, and they get away with it.
And then you get killed.
And then...
for helping them.
He's a serial killer.
Can't trust anybody.
Ugh.
So 2 days later, Robert was at home spending time with his family when his daughter, Sonia, stopped by for a visit. Sonia thought that he had been acting oddly, and they got into an argument about it, which had turned physical. Sonia called the police, and Robert was charged with misdemeanor assault. But the charges would be dropped if he didn't commit any other crimes.
Ah, so he was on probation.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Essentially, yeah. While all this is going on, police are scoping through lists of owners with white Corvettes, which brought them to Rita Jones.
Rita! Rita's gonna save the goddamn day.
She is. Robert Yates was listed as the previous owner of the vehicle and was called into questioning on September 15th, 1999.
Literally because he sold his car.
Mm-hmm.
Because it worked.
Yep.
He got caught.
Yep.
Wow.
Robert showed up nervous and sweating.
Yeah.
When asked for a blood sample, he said he would think about it.
Okay.
Which made the investigators even more sus about him. And when asked about the traffic violation on his record for that failed turn signal, he corrected the officer's report and told them it was a white Corvette, not a Camaro, as it was listed in the report.
Oh, so he corrected his own...
yeah.
The old stupid. Fuck up. Like, oh, I don't have a Camaro, I had a Corvette.
Yeah, stupid. God. Officers noticed how nervous and sweaty he was, and then days later, he also refused to give the blood sample, which is absolutely your right to say no.
Doesn't look good, though.
But if you're innocent, yeah, maybe just do it.
Yeah, he's pulling a Dr. Sleazeburger.
Yep.
He should have just put a fake
blood pin thing. Rita Jones, in the meantime, consented to officers searching her vehicle.
Yes, Rita.
The white Corvette previously owned by Robert Yates.
Mm-hmm.
Fibers found in the vehicle closely matched the same fibers found on the body of Jennifer Joseph, one of the first victims. With this evidence, officers were able to get a more intrusive search warrant for the car on April 10th, 2000, and found blood stains that matched Jennifer's blood, and under the passenger seat was a missing button from her shirt, as well as a hair that matched Jennifer's.
Oh my God!
This was more than enough to haul him in for more questions, and he was arrested for suspicion of the murder of Jennifer Joseph on April 18th, 2000.
Yeah, bye, bitch.
When he got hauled in, his wife didn't know and got a call from his boss at the aluminum plant saying that he got a no-call, no-show for work. So Linda puts on her britches and drives to the hot tub motel to see if her sleazeball husband is there.
Al's hot tub motel.
Yeah. Fucking, you can't make this shit up. He's obviously not there because he's in a jail cell. So she stops by and grabs a coffee from the BK. While she's in the parking lot, she runs into some officers who inform her of her husband's arrest. They take her in to see if she knows anything about the murders or his activities. She obviously doesn't. She was pretending that everything was fine and dandy.
But like, how do you not
How do you know not know? She probably knew. Is up. She knew.
Like, or maybe she didn't know. She just thought, well, he's
fucking weird. He's a little
with sex workers, and I don't know what else to tell you.
I mean, I don't want to have sex with him. Let's let the sex workers do it.
Yeah.
So DNA tests linked him to the murder of Jennifer Joseph, as well as DNA matches from several of the other victims. He was charged with 13 counts of first-degree murder and one count of attempted first-degree murder from the girl he just grazed.
Yeah.
Robert offered to plead guilty to the murders and provide information about an unknown case in order to avoid the death penalty.
Oh.
Spokane PD agreed to take this bargain, and he drew up a map showing where he buried Melody's body.
Oh,
the one under the window.
In his own garden.
Yeah. Robert Yates was sentenced to 408 years in prison.
408?
However, God. He was also being charged in a separate county, and that county decided to withdraw his plea bargain, and they charged him with two murders and gave him the death penalty.
It's like, they're not going to kill you. But we will.
Yeah. Side note, I left this part out of the telling of his murders, but he also attempted to perform necrophilia
there
with the
is.
Majority of his victims. And it appeared yeah. It was apparently like a huge part of his trial.
Yeah.
Which is really gross. That's fucking nasty.
Yeah.
He tried to appeal his sentence by saying that he couldn't help but kill because he was a necrophiliac.
No.
Go get a sex doll, throw it in the freezer. It'll be cold. It'll be fine.
Oh, that's so weird. Like, I can't be put in jail because I love dead bodies.
Yeah, I had to kill them.
No!
The Washington State Supreme Court rejected all of his plea deals, but in 2018, the Supreme Court ruled that the death penalty was a violation of their state constitution, so his sentence was charged back to life in prison.
Aw, boo.
Boo. Some people just deserve that shit. Robert Yates committed at least 17 confirmed victims and potentially more in Germany and Alabama.
Yeah, what was it, 26 in Germany? That yeah. They were like, I don't know what happened to him.
Some
but that's
them.
Whenever old Bob lived there.
Yep.
Ugh.
Yeah, you can't tell me he didn't do that.
Yeah, and he lived there for like two different times.
Two different times.
3 to 4 years.
7 years total, yeah. Guess where he's serving his sentence?
Where?
The same place he
worked
at. Yep.
Oh my God. that's ironic.
I'm gonna let you do the fun facts since you found them.
I did find some fun facts.
So fun.
Okay, well that was terrible, and... Mm-hmm. I hated it, but I did appreciate that you did it. You gave us another serial killer.
I did.
Because it's been a minute.
Yep.
It's been a while.
People
I don't know
be
who
loving
the last
them.
One is. Yeah, but we do have some fun facts. Yay! You've seen SVU.
I fucking love SVU.
So, in SVU land, there is a character named Gregory Yates.
Which is how I decided to cover this.
Yes. And Gregory committed a series of rapes, kidnappings, and murders in several states. We have New York, Illinois, North Carolina, New Orleans, and New Jersey. As a child, this Yates also was an animal murderer and set fire to his childhood home's basement. This Yates was also very well educated, but instead of the military route, in the show, he was a doctor and a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And he too had a burial ground in which he disposed of his murder victims.
Yeah, he disposed of them on the beach, right? Usually?
I really don't remember.
I think it was the beach.
I remember seeing him and I can picture his face. Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember. And this Yates in SVU has a huge story arc and is played by actor Dallas Roberts, who looks eerily similar to
weird.
Robert Yates. I mean, the face shit, the eyebrows.
It's fucking weird.
They look so similar, they could be brothers. It's crazy. So the character of Gregory Yates is featured in season 16, episode 20, called Daydream Believer. Season 17, episodes 1 and 2, named Devil's Dissections and Criminal Pathology. And season 17, episode 14, called Nationwide Manhunt. But his first and last appearance as Gregory Yates was on Chicago PD.
It was a good fucking episode.
It was a crossover.
I've seen several of their, like, episodes. That one was really fucking good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it. I had no idea that he was in, like, another show mm-hmm. as the same character.
It's fucking wild.
It's so weird. It's so cool. Oh, my God.
That was a long one.
That was exhausting.
It's gonna take you a little while to edit.
It is, but that's okay. Before you go,
follow us on Instagram at #murderpod. Spell it all out.
And if you like this, give us 5 stars.
Please.
I don't see any reason not to.
And if you give us a little review on Apple or Spotify, we'll read it out.
Yeah. 5-star review. Well, maybe we'll read the 1 or 2. I don't know.
Sometimes they're real funny.
We have a Patreon. Go check us out on there. I will be updating it shortly. I promise.
Maybe we'll get a Scardust episode on there.
Yeah. And I have to go eat Dustin's chicken dinner that was finished about an hour ago.
Yep.
Oh, Dustin got... So last year,
mm-hmm.
Dustin had Terry, his yeah. father, for Secret Santa, and he got him a meter.
Yeah, I remember.
And he was all about it. And then Terry lost the meter.
Okay.
And he didn't find it until about 3 days ago.
Okay.
But then Terry had Dustin for Secret Santa this year, so he got him a meter.
Oh my God.
And he used it tonight. And we found out that our oven is 70 degrees cooler than what it says, what you set it to.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
Yeah. So like it takes a super long time to cook things, and we now know why.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
I have to go to Crumble because Kayla really wants to try their cookies. She's never had it before. Or she's had the chocolate chip ones, but never like the fancy ones that they release.
Oh, Crumble?
Yeah.
I thought you said Crumble.
Crumble. Crumble cookie.
Crumble.
Yeah, I'm going to go surprise her with some cookies.
Oh,
so she'll be happy. Sweet. I am. I'm a great girlfriend.
You really are.
I go above and beyond.
The call of duty.
Yes. Plus, she's cutting my hair tomorrow, so I got to be really nice.
That's true.
Yep.
You're not letting the mullet go?
No, I am letting the mullet go. She cleans it up every 2 weeks.
Oh, sorry.
She's very specific about it. It has to look perfect.
Oh, that's fun. Oh, mm-hmm. my God. I'm so sweaty. All right, we have to go. Thanks for hanging out.
Love you. Bye. Don't murder anybody and cover their head with a grocery bag, because that's gross.
Bye, bye, bye.
Bye.
Be fun, have safe.
Be fun, have safe. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to #murder. Episodes are written and edited by Alex Lewis and Scarlett Hibden. Our intro and outro music is written and played by Derek Branton. Our cover art is by the lovely Lauren Walker. And our name was created by the most wonderful, supportive, and super hot boyfriend, Dustin Branton. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or ideas, you can reach us at #murderpod@gmail.com. That's #murderpod@gmail.com. And don't forget to tell all of your friends about us. Thanks. Bye.
Patrol Inc.
Pantrol.
God damn it. God damn it, Bobby. And what does everybody... What?
What does everybody Nancy do?
What the fuck did I write? Interdicting.
Yep. We're about halfway through.
Yeah, I know.
All right, honey.
I do care. I'm sure it's gonna be great.
What do you make?
I think chicken, rice, and some sort of vegetable. Gotta have a green vegetable. Can't have dinner without a goddamn green vegetable.
Linda was obviously alarmed when she saw the fucking blood all over the fam. The fam bam.
The fam.
Start the fam.
Start the fam ban. You can't. Who is committed? Oh, goddamn it. Jesus Christ.
And while she's in the parking lot, she runs into officers foul order admit. And this wasn't helping the investigators get any apathy from the public. They're like, oh, well, you know, he's cleaning up the streets, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, wait, hold on. Empathy, not apathy.
Empathy.
Wait.
Oh, wait. Her clients, blah. By Robert Aids. She was all, I made a typo. Brian knew about his, a shell casing, cute. 2772. I think it's a fun name.
That didn't look, so we can,
Linda's dad worked as a correctionals officer. Linda's dad. I hadn't done it all episode.
Correctionals officer.
Correctionals officer.
Okay.
Okay.
That was a nasty one.
Penitentiary.
Hold on.
All right. Dun dun.